Well, hey everyone, welcome to this week's show. I hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving, those of you in the U.S. anyway. And you know, quite frankly, the rest of you should just be thankful anyway. So, very excited about this week's show. Later on, we have one of our counselors here in the studio to talk about dealing with a long-distance relationship and how to have that intention in a relationship that may not have, like, the physical proximity to it. Our culture segment is with Kay Wima. She wrote a book called Cleaning House, kind of dealing with entitlement in her own children, and we're going to apply that to young adults. And what life skills do you have or not have and need going into adulthood? What does it mean to grow up and to take on responsibility? So that'll be a fun discussion. And before we go into our roundtable, I want to remind you that we have an internship program here at Focus on the Family, and we are actually looking for our intern positions. We are filling them for the coming summer. So you can spend your summer, you can contribute to the Ministry of Focus on the Family, and you can earn college credit along the way by interning with Focus. That's beginning on June 3rd of 2013. Our internships are currently posted at focusonthefamily.com/jobs. So go in there and check it out. You can get internships in a number of different departments here: our books and curriculum department, audio programming, parenting and youth ministry, children's magazines, human resources, and of course, the best of all, Boundless. So make sure that you check that out. Well, here we are for this week's roundtable, and I have got three women at the table to talk about women and work. Woohoo! Are you ladies excited?
Yeah,
yes, ma'am.
All right. Well, this is going to be a fun discussion because it, as I say in the blog post where I describe this week's show, it's kind of like one of the wah, 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 you know, whenever women start talking about this, you know, people are like, oh, seriously, they're going to get crazy and catty, or it's going to be some, you know, big downer or whatever. But we're not going to let it become that. Hopefully all of you out there have read Carolyn McCulley's article that posted yesterday, and I think she does a great job of addressing more a holistic approach to labor and how it affects the family and what it's looked like historically. And so we're going to kind of get down to brass tacks and talk about that practically with a few women here. So we have got Katie Overstreet. Katie, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me again, Lisa.
Well, very good to have you. Katie, we usually bring her in here to talk about orphans, but now she's going to have to talk about work. So we're switching gears on her. So she is here at Focus on the Family, heading up our really our Wait No More efforts and our orphan care efforts here at Focus on the Family and all that we do there. So very exciting role that she has. My good friend Julie Neals is here. Hey, Julie.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Well, very fun to have you. Her little itty bitty baby Anne is out with our engineer Dave. Bless his heart. He already had to put a binky in her. So he's doing double duty out there. But Julie has a long history in the world of media relations, having worked for Focus on the Family as well as Exodus International, and now doing a lot of consulting with authors and other folks, helping them get ready for, I was going to say the stage and screen, but not really, the small screen for TV, for
right, exactly. Just the radio airwaves.
You know, and in her free time, she has 6 children, and so including little Anne, and has to do the yeoman's job of running a home and all that that entails. And so she's had definitely a few seasons related to that. Also, Sid Stenica is here. Hey, Sid.
Good morning.
Sid has some experience under her belt as well, having come from the corporate world into a stay-at-home mom role, decided to stay with her son when he was how old?
He was 13.
He was 13.
Took me a while to get that one.
13. And but now he's much, much older than 13.
He's 23 now.
See? Okay. Yeah. And now she is helping to care for her mom, Minnie, who literally just blesses my socks off. Minnie is the cutest. Mm. She's how old now?
She's going to be 90 on the 4th of July.
Oh, my goodness.
And she takes care of me.
Yeah, I was going to say, sometimes Minnie is a little more active than I am. And I probably should just invite her to go running with me. She probably would.
She would.
Oh,
in a
word.
Moment. She's ready anytime.
So Sid has had a number of different roles in the home and beyond. So like I said, if you guys have that article printed it out or pull it up on your screen where you are and follow along with us, because we're going to go ahead and talk about it. So the first question I just want to ask you ladies is, when you think, I mean, have you been in conversations recently or historically or whatever where you've had to talk about what you do as, quote, work, whether it was defending a job you had, why you worked, you know, if you had kids and worked, what your future is related to work. What kind of conversations have you even had with friends and family about this?
Lots. There are lots of conversations along the way. This is Sid talking, but mm-hmm. I think it's a matter of what we expect from ourselves or what perhaps other people expect from us. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of how we answer those questions. Mm-hmm. Some people think that working women, you know, that that's a bad thing. Other people think, wow, you're a career woman. How dare you quit your job? Mm-hmm. So a lot of conversations on both sides of that, depending on who's asking. I've had to really figure out what are my convictions, not just what they want to hear, but what do I really need to say mm-hmm. that is truthful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, over the years, I've had several conversations with friends about this topic, and it's so hard because it's tough to apply, you know, like she says in the article, a one-size-fits-all sort of approach, and you find so much defensiveness on either side. And so, just like Sid said, I think it's a tremendous personal journey to figure out yourself where you're standing on these issues as the seasons of your life change or as you head into a different season. And mm-hmm. so it's been an interesting journey and just interesting having this conversation with friends who often feel guilty mm-hmm. on one side or another, and dealing with false guilt and your identity and the deeper issues that this points to is often the brass tacks, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. that is harder to peel back layer after layer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a bit in a unique situation because my husband and I have been married for just about a year and a half now. And so most people who know me as Katie, who works at Focus on the Family. And so my career and my responsibilities here have been what have kind of defined me for a while, especially for people here. And so, of course, I talk about what I do all the time because I am a spokesperson for the ministry. And so I'm on radio shows or I'm talking to pastors or interacting with groups around the country talking about what we do as a ministry. And so just in the last maybe few months, my husband and I have had more of those realistic conversations of what does the future look like for us? What if we have kids soon? I mean, for a while it was like, oh, we're just now a brand new married. And all of a sudden we go, oh, we've been married a year and a half now. Maybe we could start thinking about that. Mm-hmm. And then just how does that look for us? And I have this career, but that's not what my identity is lies on. And so where do we go with this? And then talking to several of my girlfriends who are already in that phase and who have full-time jobs and are wrestling, like you said, with that, shouldn't I be home with my kids? Or no, I have to be at work, or we have to pay the bills. And so I have to work, and just wrestling with those different ideals. And so me on kind of that front end of it saying, wow, what is this next phase going to look like for us? And where do we go from here?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think it's interesting because when, you know, as I am and as you were not too long ago, Katie, when you're a single girl, there's really no other option. You're just
right.
working to support yourself. And honestly, you know, yeah, it's not like I'm going to sit home and watch Judge Judy. So, I mean, I need to be out doing something and support myself. But as you go through, you know, like you said, those conversations of, okay, this season may change. What is this going to look like? Now there are other options. Now there are other people to consider. There are other considerations. Did any of you, I mean, Katie, you alluded to this, having to now think about this, but what did those conversations look like, whether with your husbands or whether with, you know, as you knew, maybe something here is going to have to change, or maybe something will change, or this may, you know, there may be some differentials here. What did those combos look like?
You know, mine were ongoing personal crises. It seemed like one after another. I mean, really, when I left my job 9 years ago, a job that I loved, that I felt like I was really, that was suited for me, suited well for my personality, it was like, you know, running at 90 miles an hour off a cliff and then being in a free fall emotionally. And so my entire social world changed and everything. And so the conversations with friends around me, some who were either at the same point and others who were not, were literally about grieving that time period and trying to deal with the fact that I had built a false identity and a whole social world around mm-hmm. this structure in my life, mm-hmm. you know, which some of that was not all unhealthy, but a lot mm-hmm. of it was. And so those conversations were around those topics, my identity and what am I doing and where am I going and who am
well,
I now?
One that was naturally very affirming. I mean,
yes.
When you go,
yes.
You know, it's not when you trade mm-hmm. that in for sippy cups, it's not like your kids are like every day, Mom, let me just tell you what a great job you're doing. And let me just.
Absolutely.
You know,
and the performance review,
right.
And it's really
exactly.
great.
You didn't
and
get,
the fear
and
of
raise,
everything that you've put into it, will it ever mm-hmm. come back? Will I ever get to do this again? Mm-hmm. And so just, I remember laying in bed at night, wrestling with God over these decisions and the Lord just saying, do you trust me? Mm-hmm. You know, again, which is a question for mm-hmm. everyone at all points in life. And no, I'm not going to guarantee that you're going to get all this back. Mm-hmm. Do you trust me mm-hmm. to obey me in this point? And so it, you know, it was a tremendous wrestling with God type of thing for me, the conversation with him and then everything that flowed out of that with conversation with other women at different points in life.
Mm-hmm. Sid, you had quite a, I mean, you, like you said, you stepped down from a pretty high corporate position. Did you have any of that wrestling or people who
oh,
were
yes.
like, oh my goodness, why are you wasting all your experience or career by choosing to walk away?
Yes, I was on quite the trajectory from the beginning. And that trajectory was, you know, what's the next thing? What's the next promotion? What's the next customer? What's the next cool job? Mm-hmm. And it was wonderful. But it was really the conversation with God that got my attention. He tapped me on the shoulder, so to speak, and said, why are you working? Mm-hmm. Not that the working was bad. I was mm-hmm. good at it. I was blessing people, I think. But it was the why. And it all came down to identity, significance, and security. Mm. And I would say, you know, good questions. Hold on. I'm really busy. I'll be back. And I would run off to the airport or run off to do something else. And It was a 2-year conversation back and forth where he lovingly said, what about your significance in me? Mm-hmm. What about your identity in me? Mm-hmm. What about your security in me? Mm-hmm. And after 2 years, the other, you know, I had some significant conversations with other moms who did not work. And I asked them things like, well, what do you do all day? where do you go in the morning? What, you know, mm-hmm. what time do you get up? Mm-hmm. Do you ever take a nap? I mean, these things were just funny to me. Do you ever watch a movie? Yeah. What does your living room look like with sun in it at 2 p.m? It mm-hmm. just was crazy. And then, of course, conversations with my husband and my son. And one of the most significant was with my son, 7 a.m, driving to school, dressed for presentations, just got off a conference call from some country that's 8 hours different. And I said to my son, I don't want to be a quitter. That's the thing I'm struggling with now is I don't want to be a quitter. Yeah. I'm supposed to run the race with perseverance. And he said, I don't know, Mom, but I think for you, the race is to learn how to stop running.
Hmm. Wow.
It was powerful.
Hmm.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So that was sort of almost permission. Mm-hmm. I needed permission from everybody to not be on this track.
Mm-hmm.
And so those were some significant moments for
yeah.
me.
I can relate a lot to what Sid was just sharing about how your identity and your security really does, you find that in your work, especially as someone like you said, Lisa, who I enjoy what I do. I was doing this before I met my husband, and it does give me a lot of satisfaction to know that I'm doing something that I'm passionate about and that I believe helps people. And so at this point, you know, over the last couple of months, my husband and I have actually been, even though we're not expecting a baby yet or have children currently in our home, I've been having to walk through that process of saying, okay, God, was my identity really found in you? Because he just recently graduated from graduate school. And so he's been looking at positions. And honestly, some of the jobs he's looking at are not in Colorado Springs. Mm-hmm. And so my initial reaction is just that fear of, no, wait, you can't take this from me. Mm-hmm. And then I have to go, wait a second. This isn't mine to start. This isn't where I find my identity. This isn't where I find my purpose. And this isn't my reason for being is to do this. Now, granted, I get to do something very cool, but it's not really who I am. And so just that walking, I mean, I'm still kind of in the middle of that process of just saying, okay, Lord, we're going to be open-handed with what you have next, whether that be mm-hmm. we have kids right away or whether we move across the country for my husband's job or whether we end up staying here and I work here for a few more years or whatever that looks like, just being open-handed with what God would have next for your family.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'd like to kind of reference the article that Carolyn wrote in this regard, because what do you guys think about what she had to say about, you know, historically, in the last couple hundred years, how as a society we really have redefined work, whereas the home used to be the source of production rather than consumption. And it was much more about, you know, she used the example of like Kate Luther, you know, who ran the family business so that her husband could study the Bible all day and write a ridiculous amount of content that we're still reading. And so, but now we've done this whole like, now we need to ship ourselves off to go produce for other people so that we can consume. And it's just a weird, what do you guys think about that?
I really appreciated her approach to the whole issue and looking at it not only historically, but through a scriptural lens. She's absolutely right in what she's saying as far as the myopia of the career world and how we have progressively built it around ourselves. Mm-hmm. And not, you know, I even appreciated how she approached talking about how this affects your family. Mm-hmm. Because when I have this conversation with a lot of women, it does not involve that a lot of times. It involves me, what I have put into it, what I'm going to get out of it, where will I go, what will my identity be if I leave this, all of those things. And so I thought what she pointed to in history and in scripture was very poignant in saying we have progressively gone more and more towards a me-centered career discussion in our culture, which has rendered a very myopic, one-sided discussion, you know, and that we see on the playgrounds and, you know, at our, you know, mom's coffee groups that I often see.
Mm-hmm. Anyway. Well, I think it can be interesting because at times we think, you know, I need to do this to serve other people and I need to keep doing this work because it's important and it helps others in some form or fashion. And I was talking to a good friend of mine who's been wrestling with this same thing, and her daughter is about 3. And sweetest little thing, totally high energy. And so she's told me, you know, I think honestly, the easier choice would be to go to work mm-hmm. because it is hard mm-hmm. with this little 3-year-old who has mm-hmm. more energy than I know what to do with. But if I'm really going to serve people, I need to start with her and I need mm-hmm. to be the best mom for her. And so she's been wrestling with how much do I work? Do I work at all? And she hasn't had, the Lord hasn't given her a clear definition yet of what that looks like. But that struggle of I can say that I'm serving people, but I don't want to do that to the detriment of my own daughter either.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I want to honor you, Katie, for your thoughts and mm-hmm. your contemplations now at this stage of your marriage, mm-hmm. at this stage of your potential family life. It's just really neat to see young people thinking about these things now. Mm-hmm. For me, when I was doing this, it was very much the women need to be out there working and you can kind of do it all, but it was very segmented. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't have the kind of interaction that we do now personally. Like with an iPad or an iPhone, you know, where you can just kind of check in all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, what I did, which was kind of crazy but fun, I would go to work, and it was definitely work. And I not only went away from the home, I went off on an airplane a lot, mm-hmm. often. Mm-hmm. And I remember walking through the Dallas airport with my briefcase and my cooler of breast milk, you yeah. know, trying to figure out how to keep that all safe. And I would mark it on the top and put it in the hotel restaurant refrigerator, you know, so nobody would tamper wow. with it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was crazy. But, you know, I was trying to do it all. And yet, at one point, my son was in a daycare, but I made sure it was right, the one right across the parking lot. Mm-hmm. And they would put a piece of paper in the window when he was hungry. Mm. And then I could go feed him. Mm. That was amazing. That was a totally different thing to be doing at that time. Mm-hmm. That kind of interaction with your child while you're working. Mm-hmm. But we were, I mean, it was total mode change.
Yeah.
From and I think it's difficult now for young mothers to work a little bit and then do the child and then, you know, back and mm-hmm. forth, back and forth all day. I mean, mm-hmm. I kind of went from super mom to super exec and then yeah. super mom again, you know.
Yeah.
But
well,
so.
And that's a great segue, Sid, I think, into another thing I wanted to bring up from the article. And it was something that I felt kind of gave me a personal sense of conviction and smackdown. And it's where she talks about presumption and how we look at the seasons of life. And we say, you know, and it's very much like the scripture of why are you saying that tomorrow you're going to go and do this or that you're going to be here right. or you're going to go and plant this or plow this, you know. And she talks about, she says, investing what you have right now for God's glory prevents presumption about the future. So those mm-hmm. women that are saying, well, I don't need to get skills because I'm just going to get married. It's going to curb anxiety about the future. What if I will always have to work? Check sinful comparison. I'll never be a soccer mom. And squashes worldly ambition. I will never give up my important job to be a full-time mom.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that really addresses any number of women's hearts as mm-hmm. to whatever stage we're in. What resonated with you guys about that?
I thought she did a great job of really peeling back the layers of looking at the spiritual dimension of this issue and just how Satan is always trying to get us to exchange our God-given identity for anything else so that we will walk with less power, less authority, and less conviction about who we actually are in the spiritual realm. One thing I noticed that the Lord just brought this back as a memory that when I 9 years ago left my job, when someone would ask me, so what are you doing now? I could not spit out fast enough a list of things that I thought were worthwhile. Well, I'm working, I'm volunteering on this or volunteering on that. And boy, I couldn't get it out fast enough. And I realized, what is wrong with me? I mean, some of these people were even like, okay, you know, just kind of flabbergasted even by my response. And I realized this is about you and the fact that you have made this list of things a reason for saying I am still worth something.
Exactly.
And God really dealing with me about my pride, because I didn't want to be the average housewife. I wanted to be the mother that could do everything, or the woman who went home but still dabbled in a lot of other things. And it was the badge of my worth. And so I was saying I'm still worth something by rattling off this ridiculous list of things I'm doing. And so, you know, the Lord really showed me, you are exchanging a lie for the truth. And I think that that is really what's going on here. And she pointed to that, that Satan is always looking to get in there with other lies, regardless of what season of life you're at right now.
Right. And she made a great point, too, about the should women work? What does that mean? Well, yes, women should work hard every day. What we do as children, as daughters of the King, what we do is what he has for us today. And if we're in a job and it's going well and that's what we need to be doing and we're talking with a multitude of counselors about that, that's wonderful. But there comes a time in life where maybe that's not such a great idea. I loved the concept of work used to be around the home. I mean, supporting a husband and helping in that way and to do those things around a home life just makes a lot of sense. And I think some of us just yearn to be back with that. But we don't want to have to then leave the workforce to just be at home either without some combination of using our skills and talents. So, yeah, I thought that was good.
Yeah, I think we quickly look to the future and say, oh, I will always do this, or I will never do that, or how could my future change? And how quickly I forget that 6 years ago, I never would have predicted that I would be here in this seat on this show doing what I do and having the responsibility that I have. So 6 years ago, if you would have asked me, I'm like, yeah, I'll probably get married very soon and I'll have kids. And I mean, this conversation wouldn't have even necessarily happened. And so then you go, okay, the Lord can do amazing things in our lives. And so it's easy for me to say I will or won't do certain things in the future. But how quickly the Lord can change that and say, nope, this is the direction that I'm taking you on, regardless of what we had thought. And so we kind of set these expectations for where our life is headed. But if I would have set my own expectations 6 years ago, I wouldn't have been here and I wouldn't have been able to do what I've been doing. So we have to, I mean, there's the good and the bad of kind of being that open-handed, is God can take you in places in ways that you never expected and never anticipated.
Yeah. So as we kind of wrap up here, I want to ask each of you kind of a two-part question and see how you would weigh in on this. First of all, then, where you are right now, what are you finding unexpectedly fulfilling that maybe 5-10 years ago you would have never said, you know, you could get any kind of, you know, not talking about identity, because again, like Julie said, it has to be in Christ. I mean, we have to take what we have as the opportunity to serve, the opportunity to work. But how are you being fulfilled, like what, you know, what unexpected ways? And then secondly, how are you planning for, or are you planning for, the next season? I mean, I like what Carolyn says about, you know, you are where you are right now for a reason, but what if God, you know, now then in the future has another season for you, and how will that shift? And do you have any fears and or anxieties about that, or, you know, feelings of inadequacy of what if I'm called to do something else or move in another direction, or do my kids are going to be out of the nest, or sorry, two-parter.
Yeah, that's a loaded question. I think what I'm finding maybe that I didn't expect, and this sounds odd, but it's just peace in being settled in myself, and also just the deep questions of life that I'm having with my children. My oldest is 9, and I'm homeschooling right now. And just all the conversations that come up about life and pain and sorrow, And another thing I'm finding fulfilling, which, you know, is probably a whole other broadcast, but, you know, we had a son who passed away, and I truly enjoy spending time with other women who are suffering, because it is such a ministry to both the Lord ministers to me and opens my heart up to be real with others when I'm sharing and available to him. And so I really love that. And just being at home has given me more time to think about those deep issues of suffering and pain, rather than just, you know, running around and being busy with a lot of things. And then as far as just preparing for the future, you know, I think holding that open with loose hands is a challenge for me. Mm-hmm. But where I'm headed with my kids and teaching them critical thinking skills and really how to hear the voice of the Lord is about as far as I've thought. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some days, you know, really I haven't thought as far as, you know, getting the next cup of coffee and changing the next diaper, to be real honest. But I really appreciate, you know, just having this conversation about the continuum of the tasks of your life, the seasons of your life, because it's such a temptation from Satan to focus on our achievements here in this lifetime. Mm-hmm. And the real payoff is in the one to come. Mm-hmm.
If I look at where I am today, I do find a lot of fulfillment and joy in what I get to do with my work. And I work to find families for kids in foster care. And I think that those kids are so deserving of families. And I think that there are many families out there who just need to be challenged with it and need to be open to it. And so I love being able to help make those connections. And so it is really joy giving to me to get to do that. And as I look to the future, like I mentioned earlier, I'm really in that phase of, okay, I don't know what that next phase looks like for us, but really just trying to be open-handed and saying, okay, Lord, take us on this journey that you're going to take us on, whether, again, that leads to kids right away, whether it leads to a new job somewhere else, whether it's staying here for longer. And in the meantime, you know, really, I also love being the surrogate aunt and being the kind of mother to my nieces and nephews, who, no disrespect to your kids, but they are the cutest, sweetest kids of all time. And so just getting to enjoy that and enjoy that season, too, and learning from them what it looks like to be a good mom and to be a good aunt, even if I'm not right in that season, and learning from these different experiences until the Lord plants me into that next thing that he's called us to.
This is so fun. I really have enjoyed this with you guys. I think for me, the fulfillment that I find now in this chapter, which has been almost 10 years now, is that I have learned how to be still and know that he is God. I couldn't be still before. My quiet time was not quiet. And I have learned to relax, let go, not have to be everything all the time. And I tell people I used to be really type A, and now I'm kind of B minus. But I'm great. Such an overachiever. I'm working towards C. So that's really backwards. But so there's a lot of fulfillment in having margin in my life. I still do quite a bit. I'm teaching a lot now. I'm doing a lot of things. But I'm working with elderly, just having a great time with things that I love to do. But having margin, I look at a day, and if I have, you know, every hour filled, I'm not happy anymore. I want to have margin so that I can look for that opportunity that may come up before or after something to just talk, to just be, to just share with people. It's much more of a one-on-one ministry now, and that's been great. As for the next chapter for us, we are in a time of waiting. My husband and I are in that empty nest syndrome. The son is grown, the daughter is grown, they're all working, they're off, and we're kind of going, now what? And we are really holding our hands open to say, Lord, give us purpose at this point. My generation has 25, 30 years after the success stage to go be significant and do something, and we're just not sure what that is. And I want to know right now.
But you're open.
You know, but I'm waiting. We're just waiting, and we're just letting God's timing be his timing. So it's a joy.
Well, and one thing we didn't really talk about much, but you said are also you have your mom in your life.
That's true.
A lot right now. So it's, you know, kind of that empty nest of releasing the younger kids, but then taking in the older generation as well.
And I have done that with my dad, with my father-in-law. You know, I am kind of that caregiver person. And as soon as my mom needs something, I'll be there. But she's so great. She's just going on and on.
But you've done a lot of planning. Like your mom lives, they actually built.
She lives in our backyard. We let her off the leash occasionally.
They built a little mother's place
back,
for her, which is so fantastic.
And it is a fabulous thing. It's a great chapter for us. That doesn't work for everyone.
Right.
If it can work, I would highly recommend it. If the personalities work, it's a joy to do. But it's been fun. And, you know, there will be a time of caring for her in whatever way she needs. So maybe that, you know, will help direct us a little bit. But she's going to go with us wherever we go. So yeah. Whatever we do, she'll there be there.
And I love that Sid shared that, because mm-hmm. the call to pour yourself out for the sake of Christ is for every believer, mm-hmm. no matter who you are or where God has you. And that really is the brass tacks, the bottom line of this discussion. Mm-hmm. And so it's a blessing and a privilege to pour yourself out to whomever God has placed in front of you right now. At whatever season of your life he has you.
Yeah.
And one other thing I might just add is that I think for women, yes, seek Christ mm-hmm. and seek his word, but also seek the wisdom of other people. I mean, talking mm-hmm. with mm-hmm. others who have been either through different chapters or similar chapters is really helpful, because do have time to talk mm-hmm. and read and seek mm-hmm. so that you can hear his voice mm-hmm. in your life.
That's good. Well, and I'll just add as we close here, it's interesting because I get a lot of emails from listeners and from readers of Boundless. And one of the things that I often get is, Lisa, you know, I guess I'm praying for you to get married. I guess I'm praying, but I'm kind of a little bit selfish because I don't really want you to get married, because then you'll leave Boundless and I kind of have to tell them, OK, look, my goal is not to be the singles poster child here, people. Okay, my identity is not in Boundless. Boundless can continue without me, Lord willing. I mean, it's just, it is not who I am. My name is nowhere on it, you know? And so it's just funny how, you know, people have that impression of like, Lisa will just always be there. And I have to say too, you know, yeah, I'm single now and I'm here.
You will have different
chapters as well. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But how do I know where I'm going to be tomorrow, let alone 5 years from now? So we all have to hold it with an open hand, everyone. So mm-hmm. ladies, thank you so much for being part of this conversation and really being open about your own journeys and looking ahead to what comes next.
You're welcome.
So
much. Thanks,
it's been our
Lisa.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Joy to the world, the Lord is come. Let earth receive her King. Let every heart prepare him room. And heaven and nature sing. And heaven and nature sing. And heaven and nature sing. The glories of his righteousness and wonders of his love, wonders of his love.
Hey everyone, for this week's culture segment, it's always fun when we have a culture segment and we can bring in a new author, and we have that this week with Kay Wima. Kay, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Very excellent to have you here. Where is home for you?
Home is Dallas.
Oh, okay. Okay. So you did have to come into Colorado Springs.
Yeah, but it's so nice because it's, so hot there, and just even a breath of cool air is so nice.
Yes. So, well, we notice that people like to come here, and then sometimes they stay. And
yes.
They don't. So that's
it's those
good.
Mountains. They're magnetic. They
I
just
know.
Pull you.
I know. That's what I'm saying. So I keep telling my family, they're up in northern Minnesota, and I'm like, they're really
fine. Oh, my word.
I know, but I can't convince them. So whatever. Well, hey, I am really excited about talking about this topic today. Kay actually is the author of a book, a relatively new book called Cleaning House, and I love the subtitle, A Mom's 12-Month Experiment to Rid Her Home of Youth Entitlement. And Kay, you actually wrote this. I mean, your kids are younger,
right,
at the time of the book and stuff, but you and I were talking a little bit about how young adults can benefit from this as well, because first of all, we're blamed for being a generation of entitlement. And I think a lot of young adults are like, what? You know, that's not fair. And I think sometimes it's given to young adults unfairly, but then there are some little elements of truth to it. So we're going to talk about just responsibility in general and how really what you've gleaned from this experiment that you decided to put your own home through, your own kids.
Yeah.
And I want you to just start out by talking about how this came about? Like, what was your wake-up call? When did you realize things need to start taking a little different tack around this place?
Well, it started, it was a fateful day and a drive home from a mind-numbing carpool conversation as I was dropping the kids off. But my then 14-year-old really looked, we were driving down one of the streets in Dallas, and Dallas has its opulent moments. He really did look to his left, and there was a Maserati, and on the right was a Lexus, and in front of us was a Porsche. And he accidentally opined and sort of mused out loud, "I wonder which one of those cars I would look good in when I'm 16. Mm. And I was like, "Oh my gosh, good luck with that." Yeah. You know, that's, I don't know how that's going to happen, because I knew at that point this screen and a controller was all that was, you know,
and then
rocking
he said, okay,
his
17, I'll give you another year.
Well, it's just so funny. And then I really said to him, you know, good luck with that by the time you're 40. And by the way, by the time you're 40, I hope you don't want that. Mm-hmm. You know, it grossed me out. Mm-hmm. And then I came home from that carpool to just be inundated with clothes everywhere, with dishes everywhere. And I had just a moment thinking, you know, these kids are looking to me to do everything for them. And I think I've groomed them to expect that. And they look to the state for all their needs. And I've sat on the couch thinking, oh, my gosh, I'm grooming socialism in my house, you know, and I don't even buy into that. And as I started to go along, you know, not just the this has got to stop, but as I started to realize what I was actually doing, it was very convicting. Mm-hmm. I told my kids, since they were little bitty, they can do anything they put their minds to, you know, really. Mm-hmm. And without realizing it, I was racing in to do it all for them, because I could do it faster, I can do it better, it's so much easier, it gets done right, all these things. And in doing that, sending a very loud and clear implied message, you can't do it, or people can do it better than you. And so, yeah, this generation has been labeled by some as Gen Me, and the word narcissism is coupled with that, and that's a very scary word, because narcissism is self-absorption to the point where you can't relate to other people, and that is counter to even the culture of a Christian.
Yeah.
And yet we see it everywhere. I mean, and a lot of it, it's interesting to consider, because it doesn't seem like a fair label. It really doesn't, because there's a part of that, that there is a grooming that came from home. And then again, it's like, ooh, do you really blame that on the parents? I don't know if that's fair either. It is to a certain point for both groups. A lot of it's society. Society has done a pendulum shift throughout the years to moving towards this idea of self-esteem. You're good. You you know, people love you. It's sort of like that Stuart Smalley on Saturday Night Live so many years ago. You know, people love me. I'm okay. And it's a joke, because that really is what people have said. They've taken self-esteem, thanks to movements like existentialism in the early 1900s, thanks to a movement in parenting by Dr. Spock in the 1940s. He wrote a book that became like the parenting Bible, that made the child the center of the family, and the child's self-esteem so important. And so you ushered in this very interesting age of medals and trophies and being awarded for just being rather than for doing. And so, yeah, it can be crippling.
Yeah. So you obviously didn't start out as a new parent and say, I'm going to do everything I can to enable my kids. I mean, you didn't.
Oh, no, wouldn't have dawned on me. In fact, honestly, I never intended to write a book. It wouldn't have dawned on me, period, except in that moment of just being, you know, a frustrated mother. And that's all you have to do is push a mom. It was just one little push too far. Uh-huh. And I was like, I've had it. Mm-hmm. And so I stopped it all, you know. And for myself, I came up with these 12 ideas. Well, what does someone need to know before they get out of the house, you know? And I did that for a game for myself. You know, it wasn't on purpose to have something to come out of it. And it was that realization as I started to go along, going, oh my gosh, I had no idea how much I enable these kids. And that when I do go in there and do it for them, that implied message is what they're really believing. And they really do believe that it's so important to get an A on something regardless how they got it. You know, which is really, gosh, there was an article recently on cheating that they interviewed college students to just ask, have you ever cheated? The percentages were in the 90s. And it was an experience. expected thing. They don't even consider it cheating because they're expected to get the A, and that's the only way they can get the A, so it's not really their fault.
Right.
And which is fascinating, because what's at the core of that is character that's mm-hmm. been maligned along the way. And that's not a joke. And yeah. and so right then and there, someone's compromised themselves saying, well, integrity matters, but it doesn't always matter. And that's just not true. And so there's those little sneaky lies that have come in that have very unfairly in many ways infiltrated lives and made it very hard.
Yeah. Well, you talk, in fact, you just referenced the things that you feel that kids need to have under their belts before they do leave the house. Now, I want to know how you arrived at these things, because you walk us through them in the book. But did you, like, looking back on your own experience, were you equipped with these things when you left the home? Or are there some things that you kind of had to add to the mix and be like, whoa, I wish I would have known this?
Oh, there were, you know, yes.
Okay.
I think even any young adult, I never, my sweet mom, you know, we never learned how to cook. I didn't mm-hmm. learn. I didn't know how to do the
really
laundry.
Yeah.
I when I got married, I really stood in the grocery store with an empty cart going, okay, now what? You know, and then I proceeded to, someone had given us a waffle iron as a wedding present. Uh-huh. I cooked waffles 5 times a week for several months because I did not know how to cook. That's pathetic. And my sweet husband put up with it. Mm-hmm. But it was so, I will tell you though, that in that I felt horrible. Mm-hmm. I felt like a bad wife. I felt like a terrible cook because I was one. You know, all these things that I kept beating myself up over, which is a shame because there was no need for that. Mm-hmm. It just was no need. Mm-hmm. And so I look back going, man, that would have been nice to have known. It would have caused us a little less anxiety at the beginning of my marriage. But the beauty is, you know, when I was growing up, there was still that you go do it. You know, mm-hmm. I'm not doing it for you. Step up to the plate. If you fall, you get up. Mm-hmm. You know, and mm-hmm. by the way, we don't quit. You know, all these right. mantras that would play over in my head.
Yeah.
And so those skills were gained along the way. But the truth of the matter is, even when I came up with those little 12 ideas, and they were 12 things I wanted my kids to know, like how to do the laundry. I wanted them to know how to host a party. Mm-hmm. I think that's important to know mm-hmm. for so many reasons. I wanted them to know to be comfortable doing errands because mm-hmm. you've got this era now where with the technological devices that we have, people don't have to talk to each other.
Yeah.
You can just text yeah. everything or email. Well,
and young adults don't do errands. I have a number of friends that cannot even pay their bills on time because they don't even know how to set up a structure of bill pay or do, you know, and it's really costing money, time, and it's a huge stewardship
anxiety.
Issue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You've got so much that's loaded in there that's just not good for a person.
Right.
You know, and so that's how I came up with that stuff. And I wanted my kids to know what it's like to speak to a stranger. Hello, mm-hmm. you know, stranger mm-hmm. danger, all that.
Yeah.
Well, my goodness, we go take the clothes to the cleaners every other week. And the cleaner guy we've known for years. Mm-hmm. So my child can get out of the car and go pay and pick up the cleaning. And when they do that, they actually have to interact with somebody it's beautiful because they need to know how to do that. If they have those skills, mm-hmm. it will equip them to do so much more. Mm-hmm. And it just sort of takes the world from revolving around them.
Yeah.
And that world revolving around me thing is super dangerous.
Yeah, exactly. Well, what would you say, I mean, from your experiment and just from your own experience growing up and having to mature, like you said, moving into marriage and realizing, whoa, there are some core competencies there that I don't have. What would you say are the major skills that really are lacking among those who are launching out of the home and really needing to, you know, cooking you gave as one example, but what are the other ones that we're just missing out on as a culture in training
you know,
kids?
That's an interesting question. There's so many areas. I talked to a mom recently who, quote, out of necessity, her kids did have to pitch in. They didn't have mm-hmm. the luxury of time or the ability to pay somebody else to do it. And mm-hmm. it's like another mom told me that when she makes her kid mow their yard, and her neighbor stopped her, and she was like, my gosh, your child's mowing the yard? And she said, well, sure, he's mowing the yard because he needs to know how to, because if he doesn't know how to, then he's going to expect that to happen, and there he'll have to pay somebody. And you know what? He might not have the money. Or if you have a maid come in every day, then you've groomed your kid to believe that that just comes with the territory after they get out of school, mm-hmm. or whenever they launch into life at whatever capacity. And if they don't have that, then right there again, it goes, well, I'm a failure because I don't. Well, I must not be doing well because I can't do it. You know that, well, I don't know how, I can't. And it's just that it's a disservice. I've really learned it's a disservice to not have a fully equipped person coming out of your home. Mm-hmm. So take it back to faith, okay? Mm-hmm. Just the faith component of it. You know, as a parent, you really want to raise your kids to be able to be mighty warriors for the Lord, really. Mm-hmm. You want to train up your child in the way they should go so they won't depart from it when they get older. And that training, so much of it is the doing. If you're going to train for a marathon, you're going to go run the miles. It wouldn't bode well for you if your neighbor ran them for you. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. would you be able to do the marathon? Yes. Would you ever run again? No. Mm-hmm. You know, because you would be in so much pain, you wouldn't be able to get up. Mm-hmm. Well, it's that same thing in life. It's like, what can you do? So let's say I am a young adult, and let's say that I never did learn how to do that stuff. There's never a bad time to start. Mm-hmm. The part that really gets parents into this problem, and kids too, is this very weird, uber competitive environment that we live in. Whereas you've got, you know, Instagram's so hot right now, or Twitter, you know, you put something out and you're looking for the likes. How many likes do I get? Well, if I got 50 likes, I'm okay. Mm-hmm. But if I didn't get any likes, I'm in trouble. Mm-hmm. Or you see a picture of your friend and she's at a party and you're not at that party. And it's like, oh my gosh, I wasn't included in that party. Something's wrong with me. And you go down these tailspins of just self-contemplation, which again is so dangerous. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, Satan wants you right there. Because mm-hmm. if you're thinking about yourself all day long, there's no way your mind is set on the Lord or things are above. So it's a brilliant strategy, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's where you go, well, maybe I wasn't taught so well. None of us are a victim. Mm-hmm. Not one of us. No parents are victim and no kids are victims. Mm-hmm. You can start very easily by just not maybe paying as much attention to what people think about you as to saying, it's not about that. It's really about doing all that I was gifted to do before I was born, because he tells us that too. You know, I know the plans I have for you, which he did before you were even born. Mm-hmm. And therein goes that beauty. Why? You know, why lean into some of this stuff? Because you're equipped to do it. You know, mm-hmm. you want to be able to do all that has been set out before you.
Mm-hmm. So what would you say, Kay, for a young adult who says, yeah, you know, I did, you know, my parents turned me out of the house, or I did finally go to college and now I'm living with these roommates or whatever, and there just are things they don't know how to do. How can they go about, one, figuring out what they need to shore up, and two, gaining the skills that really, I mean, like you're saying, a few generations ago, you learned these things within yeah. the home. You know, mothers taught their daughters, fathers showed their sons, and now
boy,
that's not
you had
happening.
An education too. Yeah. You had, you know, when I was in junior high, it was junior high right. then. Mm-hmm. There was home economics, mm-hmm. and there was shop class, and in that shop class, boys learned how to change a carburetor. Mm-hmm. Good luck with that today. Mm-hmm. You know, I've gone to our mechanic and begged, please, you know, could mm-hmm. you please just let my kid come? Just sit in your garage, mm-hmm. but they can't for insurance reasons. Mm. And so I'm thinking, how is my kid ever going to learn how to do basic things on a car? Well, he doesn't know. So what does he think? Well, if you're going to go get a car, well, first of all, someone will buy that for you somehow. Mm-hmm. And secondly, you just, you know, you take it and have it fixed. You don't need to know how to change the oil or a tire, because yeah. what kid knows how to change a tire?
Well, especially a Maserati. I mean,
exactly.
Who's going to know how
hard.
To do that?
Where's the jack yeah. in that thing?
Exactly. So, yeah. But I mean, is there also a message here for older adults that they need to start pouring into the lives of some of these folks?
That's
to say,
a great idea too.
You know,
you know?
Honestly.
And what
I've heard of these groups
of
like older women that get together with young women and show yep. them how to cook, show them how to plan a party,
right.
prepare a meal.
And we do that at our church actually in Dallas. There is a group of older women that do that. And mm-hmm. and again, that's the way it used to be years ago. Mm-hmm. You would have the sewing bees or which mm-hmm. That is a long time ago, and that's not the way the world is today. Mm-hmm. But my goodness, you've got so much great stuff even on YouTube. That if mm-hmm. you don't know how to do something, go mm-hmm. on YouTube and figure it out.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
I still need to find the WikiHow on sewing on a button. Literally, Kay, I cannot
okay,
do it. I
love
sew
it.
A button.
Well, can't. My daughter can because she did it. You
stack
know?
Them up and give them to my mom.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah. can't.
You can
do it.
Sew a button. I know you can.
Oh my goodness. No, I tried. I can't. I just don't even know what I'm doing. I just like it's all just pulls through and I'm like, ah, yeah. And I took home ec. I took one. I made an apron and I just ironed it until like it was completely like you could slice bread with it. It was so sharp, the corners of it and stuff. And then that was the only thing I ever did. Getting that bobbin in the sewing machine. That's a nightmare.
I know, but nobody's learning how to do that now, which is, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. But what are those skills that we aren't learning? And when we throw in words like, oh, I'm owed or I deserve, mm-hmm. because it's that mentality that's dangerous. Mm-hmm. And that's the mentality that I think has people with their radar up and why they would say this generation mm-hmm. is challenged in ways that are frightening. Mm-hmm. Because if you're always throwing out, I'm owed, mm-hmm. I deserve this, then you really believe that. And that kind of takes away from the core of what this country was founded on. And mm-hmm. that is ingenuity. Problem solving, critical mm-hmm. thinking, getting up, falling, failing, getting mm-hmm. up, trying, mm-hmm. reaching for boundaries that aren't defined for you.
Yeah.
All those things that really are what build self-esteem.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, it doesn't matter what age you are. It just does, and it doesn't matter what walk of life you're in. You know, you got a 20-year-old who's single, who's going up the corporate ladder or whatever. It is the same feelings you will experience as mm-hmm. a new mother or a new father or a 50-year-old guy mm-hmm. who's going, is this all there is? Mm-hmm. Well, when you hit those things, that's where you go. Don't let that define you. Go back to the truth.
Right. Well, and again, prioritization. I mean, I see as you're talking here how, you know, here we are. We just had a roundtable discussion with women on how it's so easy for us. You know, I've been in this trap, too, to say, well, I'm putting in a 60-hour week or I'm doing this and this. I'm so busy. But then our lives are spiraling out of control mm-hmm. because we're giving all of our time and all of our energy to a job or to something, you know, and it's I think a lot of times we're overextending ourselves in things, you know, and not being able to shore up other areas. I mean, I think that's a problem, which actually brings me to kind of my final question here. And that is, I know you talk near the end of the book about what it looks like to really pour into the lives of others and right. to not look at it as, well, I need this for myself and I need to do this and this will improve my life, but to really look out for the interests of others. And right. that, especially with single young adults, is flat out necessary because a lot of us don't live in towns with our families or with a built-in support network or whatever. So we need the help of one another. And what would you say is just encouragement or practical steps for looking out for the needs of other people where you could step in and really, you know, rather than that entitlement mentality, look to serve?
Well, it's interesting because that really is the secret sauce to the whole thing, mm-hmm. which goes back to scripture when Jesus was approached with the question, what's the greatest commandment? Mm-hmm. And he said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and love others as you love yourself or as I have loved you, which encapsulates all the law of the prophets. Mm-hmm. And therein goes the secret of life. We're actually created to do that. Mm-hmm. We were not put on this earth alone, and we weren't put on this earth with nothing to do. You mm-hmm. know, when Adam was put on the earth, he was put with a helpmate mm-hmm. and he was given work. He worked the garden before it became toil. You know, it came toil after the fall. And so inside of each one of us is that need. We're created in the image of God. God is the Trinity. Always connected, always serving the other. You don't ever see one promoting itself. It's always serving and promoting the other. That's at the core of where you will actually find peace and joy. Hmm. And so for, you know, I've got some teens. Well, teenage years is like the highlight of self-absorption. You know, it's like a vortex sucking them down every time they turn around. The thing that pops them out of it almost instantly is whenever they do anything that genuinely is to serve somebody else, not to serve someone to fill their resume or to build, you know, to do it so they can say they do it, but genuinely outside of themselves doing something for someone else, it's unbelievable what it does. And it almost has an instant effect. Mm-hmm. In our house, we've got it all around us. And I tell the kids all the time, my gosh, if you can serve your siblings, you can serve anybody. Mm-hmm. And it may be mm-hmm. that same way with roommates. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to do, though, because it's like you might have that messy roommate that never, ever mm-hmm. picks up. And then you become angry. And then it's that temptation to gossip about that person and to just, you know, it's unfair. I don't deserve this. And you go down those roads again. that's where the danger lies, which he mm-hmm. tells us that that's where danger lies. Mm. That serving, just the true, honest, selfless serving, it packs the biggest punch of anything any of us could ever do.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, Kay, this has been a great discussion. Thanks so much for weighing in on this. And thanks for doing this year-long experiment so that we could learn from it.
Thank you.
The book is called Cleaning House. Make sure you check it out. I might be getting a few copies, not only to peruse myself, but maybe to give to some of my sisters. Because I'm just teasing. Well, no, I'm not really teasing. It's just so funny because I'm like thinking of, you know, nieces and nephews. And I'm like, okay, so that 11-year-old wants an iPhone,
truth. And, you know, going back to that Porsche mm-hmm. thing, you know why that kid wanted the Porsche? Because that would be his ticket to being okay.
Right, right.
I mean, really, why do they want the new iPhone? Because yeah. they're losers if they don't have it.
Right.
Why do I want it all? You know, why do I want a certain outfit? Because it mm-hmm. makes me feel all right. What, you know? And it's mm-hmm. like, no.
Yeah.
What really is that belonging is when it's a lot more other focused. What was behind all this stuff, which mm-hmm. I never would have thought until at the end of it going, gosh, what's the common denominator?
Yeah.
Someone else
yeah.
other than me.
Yeah. A lesson in there for us all. So thanks so much, Kay, for being part of this conversation and sharing your expertise.
Well, thanks for having me.
What child is this who lay to rest on Mary's lap is sleeping? Whom angels greet with anthems sweet, while shepherds watch our keeping. Why lies he in such humble place, where ox and sheep are feeding? Come, have no fear, God's Son is here, His love all loves exceeding. This is Christ the King, whom shepherds guard and angels sing. Haste to bring Him, Lord, the Babe, the Son of Mary.
We are opening up this week's inbox, and I have one of our counselors, Glenn Lutyens, in the studio. Hey, Glenn.
Hi, Lisa. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. Thanks Excellent. For joining us.
Glad to be here.
We always like it. You're kind of our you're our catch-all counselor. We make you answer all kinds of questions. You have to run the gamut of topics for us, so we appreciate you.
You're very welcome.
Well, this week is no exception. Those of you out there who know what the DTR is, define the relationship. That's what our listener is asking about today, so here we go. He says, how does a man initiate a DTR, define the relationship conversation, with someone who lives 5 hours away from him? I'm by no means scared of long-distance relationships, but how does one begin a relationship with someone who's already at a physical distance?
It's a challenge when people are at a physical distance. I think the first question a person needs to look at is this a relationship where a DTR, defining the relationship, is helpful? Mm-hmm. Sometimes, give you an example, let's say a person's away at college. They may need to get to know a number of people in a variety of different settings, and so being too premature in defining the relationship can be counterproductive. But let's presume that it's a situation where the person does have interest. I think it's wise to let the other person know that you're not trying to control. You recognize that the person may still have relationships, friendships that they can pursue, but that there is interest and you really do have a desire to get to know that person better. I think being straightforward with that, if that's in person where you do that, obviously at five hours distance, it's probably going to be more like over the phone, Skype, some type of new modern electronics that give people greater opportunity for that. But just to be clear that you have interest in that relationship and you really do want to get to know that person better. Now, it's possible for people to kind of over scrutinize and really to kind of almost micromanage a relationship. So I think people have to be careful of that. But I do think that being 5 hours apart does require some real intentional elements to it. Mm-hmm. What people will tend to do when there's that type of distance, we tend to fill in the gaps as far as what we want another person to be like. So if, you know, that 5 hours distance keeps us maybe from getting to know them when they're hungry, they're tired, just some of the normal experiences that people may encounter when they live in closer proximity, they may need to kind of set some times where they are able to maybe not stay with each other, but be in closer proximity. Can a person make a trip and visit an individual? Because long-distance relationships can work, but I think that natural tendency to try to fill in the gaps with what we want can sometimes make it even more challenging. So I think a person does need to be intentional and really set some, discuss some ideas as far as how they can get to know each other better in a more casual way.
Hmm. Now, what would you say, Glenn, about, you know, I think the danger with a lot of people in long distance relationships, especially when it involves technology, is to go way too deep too soon or mm-hmm. build up an emotional connection that doesn't have a commitment behind it. How can a person guard against that while at the same time still making sure they're gleaning good information about a person?
I think if they're able to talk about, you know, that person in their sphere of life, their, you know, their work, their school, whatever it might be, it kind of invites that individual to take a step away from the exclusivity that certainly is desired when a person is wanting a relationship to develop, but really just encourages that individual to be open and honest about just their life in general. Mm-hmm. And as a person recognizes, okay, yeah, we are at a distance. Maybe it's going to be a period of time that there's not going to be an ability to move closer to the individual. But I think by talking about just a person's everyday life experiences, work, that can kind of keep it from moving too close too soon.
Okay. Good thoughts, Glenn. I'm just sitting here thinking, and just a couple things I would add is, you know, we're talking 5 hours here, but we're not talking across the country or in another country. I would still say make it a priority occasionally to get together and do that on a schedule and obviously, you know, have boundaries and structures of accountability in place there. But also maybe invite someone else into the relationship mm-hmm. as well. Maybe a trusted mentor or friend mm-hmm. who can also get to know this person through regular email or phone calls or whatever. So you're bringing someone else into the sphere because, again, I've seen too many friends who get way too exclusive with someone, and then all of a sudden they're shutting out all of their family mm-hmm. and other friends, and that can be a danger.
It's always easier to move forward in a relationship than it is to back up. Mm-hmm. I think of a outfielder in baseball. Hmm. You know, it's just a whole lot harder to run back than it is to move forward. So if a relationship does, you know, isn't right at the edge of its emotions, there's opportunity at some point to move forward, but it's tougher to back up.
Good. Well, thanks so much, Glenn, for weighing in on this one.
You're very welcome.
Okay, everyone, that is it for this week's show. As always, we want to hear from you with your questions so we can answer them in the future. Do write to us at editor@boundless.org so that we can get them in the queue for next year. We have a whole upcoming year of inboxes to look ahead to. So also make sure that you do search for previous ones because it could be that we've answered your question in the past. So until next week, I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of boundless.org. Focus on the family.